Dr. Jen, so much to talk about today with your trip to Dubai. You did so much over there. And I've actually had feedback from a couple of friends who listen who said it sounds incredible. They already wanted to go, but now they really want to go. We've got to talk about that.
And then,
yeah, and the book that I'm reading, your book, finally, 15 to 19-year-old females, 1 in 4 have STIs, which I just can't believe. I know we're going to talk about that. And I just want to share with you some, well, I think insight about me getting in better health and better shape. It has to do with me writing, but also the world of sex. So I don't know where you want to start, but I don't really care. You tell me. Let's talk about Dubai.
Well, let me first of all, because you know how last time I had just gotten back the night before. I'm still messed up sleep-wise. Like, I'm a little dopey right now because I just took a nap before this call because I'm still all messed up by that 12-hour time difference.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had just had your acupuncture appointment. And so my sister said we completely sounded like we were hepped up on goofballs.
So, well, thank you and sorry.
Pull an old school term from The Simpsons.
Yes. Oh, by the way, so you brought up acupuncture. I just went today. She gives me a choice, and it's the first time I've ever tried cupping, and I got to tell you.
Oh, you did do it.
I did it today, and so far, incredible. Yes, I thought it was BS. I was trying to be positive about it when I talked to you last week, thinking in my mind, I'm like, whatever. But I got to tell you. Now, again, it's only, what is it? If it's, let's say it's 2:45 p.m. I went at 11:30. It lasted about 15, 20 minutes. So because I have a hairy back, let me tell you, for the first time in my life, it's paid off because she couldn't get the cups to stick. And she said, when this happens, I do slide cupping, which means I put a little bit of oil and then I slide it over it to make sure that you get the benefit. And it's a little quicker. I don't leave it on as long, but you know, it's all we can do. I said, all right, let's try it out. Well, she did this not only my lower back, but my upper right trapezius, my trap, my neck and my shoulder. Yeah. And that's been giving me trouble the last 2 weeks. And I got to tell you, it was instantaneous for me. It was like, when I got up, yes, it hurt a little bit. She's rubbing on you and there's a little bit of not a bruise, but almost like I got road rash. She said it'll go away soon, but it's just kind of normal for your first few times and can, you know, keep happening. She goes, but you just have to let me know, you know, what it feels like. Well, I'll tell you what, little bit of pain, not horrible, not much more than a fairly firm massage, to be honest. And I will tell you, my neck is loose. My shoulder feels better than it has in weeks.
Wow.
Yeah.
Just from a short treatment like that and specifically cupping.
Yeah. And I have no reason to support it. I don't endorse it.
Yeah.
I don't pay her. Like, she doesn't pay me to talk on the radio. None of that crap. It works, or at least for me. You know?
Interesting. All right. It was a long time ago. I remember first hearing about it. And I just, you know, and I don't think there was much research or anything positive to support it at the time. So I'll have to go back and look that up again. I mean, I know like Michael Phelps, like Olympic swimmer.
Mm-hmm.
I remember the one time I think he was like diving into the pool at the Olympics and he had cup marks on his back. So he obviously was getting cupping. But I just still didn't know how legit it was. So thank you for sharing that story.
Yeah. And just realize too, I'll give you a report next week because it's only a few hours after the treatment, but I'll take any kind of reprieve from that discomfort that I can.
Well, especially like a quick treatment like that it would give you versus like you could have had an hour massage that could have made you feel, you know, loose like that. But to have such a quick treatment that creates release like that and comfort, that's amazing.
Yeah. So kudos to her. Now, wait, we have to, I know we have a few things to get into, but we got to talk about Dubai. Because I have friends, like I said, who really were listening going, oh my God, I wanted to go before, but now I've got to go. They want to go to the world's tallest building because of you.
Which is very cool. The Burj Khalifa. Yeah. So the one thing, you know, I spent my last couple of days in the historic area. I can't even remember what we talked about last week. I was so out of it. But it's funny because Dubai, even like the historic area, is some of it's like faked to look old. And I stayed in this area that looked like it was like these old buildings in this kind of Middle Eastern style. And it was like, great. I loved it. And I looked up when that area was completed. It was completed in 2017.
Did that take away any of the magic for you when you found that out?
Well, I already knew when I showed up there. I actually thought, I was like, oh my God, first of all, I love it here. And I love that you could just roll out and walk and there'd be some, like, you know, there was like a Starbucks there, there's shopping right there, there's little cafes with local food. And I liked the convenience. I didn't have that in the first hotel I was in for a few days. And that's my preference. And I was overlooking the Dubai Creek in my room. So, like, I loved all of that. But I did, when I was walking around, I was like, oh gosh, I feel like I'm in Disney World a little bit. In that it had this like presentation of being something, but was faked. So I could tell. Like I that was my read on it, which is why I looked up, like, is this old or when was this area built? And like, it was just built. apparently some local like professors of like cultural history were giving a whole bunch of pushback and were really pissed off because they're like, this isn't even accurate depictions. I still loved it. And I have to say there was one thing, two things I want to share. One thing that felt most like actual, like legit cultural old school, was the two times I rode on an Abra. It's ABRA, Abra.
What is that?
And they're little old wooden boats that they call like ferries. They're called Abras, and they take you across the Dubai Creek. And it's like a 10-minute ride. And it was like, first of all, it was cheap. You pay one dirham, which is the equivalent of maybe like 30 cents.
Oh God.
And there's no like sort of, there's no organization. You just kind of walk up to the dock area and there's the closest boat. People start piling on the boat and you're just, it's like, you know, long ways. And you're just, there's like a, almost like an oval shape in the center of like, you know, well, wooden benches that just in an oval shape. And you just sit on the outside of that and you just sit, like, there's nothing holding you in. It's just like old school. And
I'm actually looking at a picture of that online right now. And it kind of reminds me of the opposite. Like if you think of the Jungle Book of the Jungle Cruise at Disneyland, except that you're not facing in the boat, you're facing out to see everything.
Right.
It's pretty badass, yeah. Actually.
Well, and right. And it's very like, it's a simple structure and clearly designed for quick transportation and not at all like in the U.S. where you like worry about people falling in or something. And it was great. And so you kind of come up and there's no real rhyme or reason and you just climb on the nearest boat and they fit about maybe 20 people sitting around in that oval shape. And once it fills up, which takes about 4 minutes or something, the driver comes, you know, guy comes over to drive it and he takes your one dirham and comes around and collects that. And then you take off. And I just like, it felt like nothing I had quite experienced before. And it was cheap. It just felt old school cultural. Like I just loved it. And I was usually the only woman on the boat with a whole bunch of men. Anyway, that was really fun. And then, did I mention last time that I went to a women's museum?
You did not. Not that I remember, no, because I was pretty out of it, too, after my acupuncture.
Yeah, I don't think I did. So it's relatively new, this women's museum created by a college professor there that's a woman. And I have to say, like, I love going to things like women's museums and being inspired and learning, because there was other historical museums I was going to go to. And I was like, no, it's all going to be men, 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 fight, 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 war, war, war. I want to learn about the women. And stuff connected to my field and work. But boy, I got to say, it was not the most inspiring museum.
Why? Is it still sort of stuck back in time where like a different culture?
Well, almost. Yeah. First of all, I was the only one there. It was relatively small and I was the only one there. And almost everything, these like this description, first of all, there's not that many women that have been allowed to do that much, frankly. And the women would be lauded for, you know, some achievement, maybe for some political role or something, or being an artist or something like that. But almost always in the description, it said something along the lines of, but she never lost sight of, you know, what mattered most, prioritizing her family and her femininity and, you know, and her cultural responsibility.
Huh. Kind of like, ooh, yeah. You know what? We gave her a vacuum cleaner. She used to use a broom, kind of like that.
Right. Yeah, kind of, yes. So it was. And even like the one of the sheikhs that helped support this museum, they had a whole section on him. And he was saying, women should have the rights to do what they're most skilled in, and be out in the world doing that and contributing to society, as long as she never lose sight of her top priority, and what most matters, and her, sort of almost this cultural humility aspect of that sort of submissive aspect. So anyway, it was like, because I'd be reading these things, I was like, oh, this is interesting. And then I'd be like, oh man, this is disheartening. It was really, it was less than inspiring.
Quite the opposite of the way things are here in America and have been for years. I'm just smart enough to realize it, that women have been in charge for many, many years.
Oh, whatever.
In my house, anyway. That's for damn sure.
Well. Somebody needs to be responsible, Clint.
Wait a minute. Hold on. I'm responsible. I know when to eat my food. I know when to tie my shoes. I know when to put on my underwear. Anyway, it was meant to be a compliment. Didn't come out like that. Anyway, I have a question for you about Dubai. And you may have more to share, but I've got to ask you. And I meant to ask you this last week.
Yeah.
So I wasn't thinking about it from a female perspective on how you may have been treated there, good or bad. What about as an American? Is there any sort of weirdness, or is that a place that very much welcomes everyone, including Americans? Because there are places you go now that, like, don't go there.
Well, so two things there. One, at least I talked to somebody that's from Europe but has lived there for the past 2 years, and he was saying, I mean, he was actually using the word tolerance, which was interesting because we wouldn't necessarily think about tolerance in a country like that. But of saying that there is a welcoming to all religions and all people. So how much that actually plays out, I don't know. But like at the airport when I was flying back, there was like Christmas trees in multiple places. I'm guessing though, I'm not sure that the menorah and the Hanukkah aspects are necessarily celebrated in a Middle Eastern country. I don't know. Maybe they would surprise me. But so that piece is, the thing is, I don't know that I could be picked out as an American per se. I walked through, I mean, occasionally, shopkeepers asked where I was from and I said, California. And they go, the U.S. And so I wasn't necessarily being pegged as an American. I was walking through the souks the one time and a guy called out, where are you from? Where are you from? You from Germany? And I was like, oh, I'll take that.
Yeah. He thought, oh, nice Helga looking woman with the nice boobs. Yeah. Yeah. No, maybe not.
Oh my God.
Sorry.
Maybe. I don't know. So anyway, so I think, so otherwise I would say though, I did not feel like I came across many Americans at all, like at all.
Huh.
And I wonder though, if part of some of why people go like Dubai is that they go to the clubs and they like the partying and they're hanging out in the beach scene, which is not things I did. And so I'm thinking that might have been where more, like maybe if younger Americans were there, they would have been drawn to those places and not necessarily the places that so much that I was hanging out or what I was doing. So I didn't feel like I came across many Americans at all. So I don't know. Interesting question. The second piece, though, I do think is interesting to address is how I felt as a woman. And I had done my research. Right? Like the first thing I Googled when I thought I was going to Dubai is it safe for women to travel alone in Dubai? And unequivocally, everything says yes.
Okay.
And I have to say, I felt that way there. Because the thing is, part of, they have strict rules on things and around crime. They have like zero tolerance, like, a 0% in terms of like drunk driving.
Mm-hmm.
Like you can't have any alcohol in you or you like go to jail. And like there was a sign I posted or one of the pictures I posted, it said no spitting. It was like some container, like plant container, but it said no spitting and that it's punishable by the law. So there's also like I think zero tolerance on drugs. So there's a lot. I've never been to Singapore, but I get a sense that it might have some more strictness like Singapore does, but in that way, it makes it safer than for a woman to be walking around alone, because there's, I get a sense of greater crackdown on crime and there's just no allowance for it. So, but yeah, that's, yeah.
your observations when you were, you know, it's funny because you think about these cultures, right? We believe, you know, what we believe because we were raised in the United States of America. And then it's kind of like we go all the way back to you talking a few minutes ago about the women's museum. And you said it was a little disappointing because it was more tolerance and more, as long as she keeps the family values in mind, she should do what, you know, what her passion is, what she's good at. It's just so funny, though, if you think about it, in every area of the world, well, I shouldn't say every area, most areas of the world, it's just normal. You know what I mean? Kind of like you starting to coach couples or getting into the profession that you're in now. When you were younger, it was just normal. And then you sort of realized, even though you're here and you, how do I put this?
What's normal exactly? I'm not totally following.
Well, it's not really meant to be that it's normal. What I was trying to explain was, you didn't feel that the way females are represented in America is normal, in quotations. So you got into the field you got into to sort of break that stereotype or that behavior.
Yeah, I would not use the word normal, but I would say, you know, fair, equal,
well, there
empowering,
we go.
Safe, compassionate.
But what, you know, I mean is there are people feasible. who believe that's normal is what I'm trying to say.
Yes, yes, yes. Well, yeah. I mean, and that's the thing is, if that's the culture that you're raised in and you're not given the space to speak out otherwise, then yes. Because the thing is, I would bet in you know, you go to a culture like that, probably majority of women that I talk to would agree that that is the focus. And that's what they want to be their focus, their families.
I knew you'd
and their
say
children.
It better than I did. I knew you would. See, that's what I meant.
I got you. Okay, yeah. I mean, I'm the word normal is just so misleading at times and a dangerous term to use. But yes, but not. But it is. It gets normalized. So I mean, if we're socialized into something and we're not given the space and freedom to think otherwise. However, also, you know, if I don't know. It depends on how much freedom they have and if they have the financial means. But if people are able, then if they don't like the culture, if they're able to leave it. But not everybody has that choice.
Yeah.
So, and then they might lose contact with their family also, which then would be terrible. So, but anyway, I don't know. I'm getting adjusted back to sleep. I would like to do more reading on the country and the culture. Like, there was just such an interesting experience. I really would like to learn more about it and just understand more the context. So.
That's funny. Yeah. Because my last question for you about Dubai, unless you have more to share, is would you go back if you could?
I don't have any desire to go back.
Okay.
Which is interesting because I think about there's so many, like, you know, even American cities and European cities and other places I've been to around the world that I have been like, oh yeah, I was like, oh, this town would be absolutely amazing to come back to. And there's other places that, like, even like Prague. Prague is a beautiful town and it was great, but like I felt good. I went there once, I checked up, versus like Paris is like freaking amazing and I'll go to Paris as much as I can. And I kind of feel like that about like Chicago or San Francisco or New York City or Boston. Like I love New Orleans. I love going back to those towns.
Yeah.
Dubai, like it was not my kind of city, for sure. And because it is so big and so, so metal, so buildings, so spread out.
Industrialized
and so new. Even the old stuff is new.
Yeah.
Which was, like I said, such a unique cultural experience for me. I'm incredibly grateful for the experience. But I don't, obviously, if somebody's paying me well enough, I would have to figure out how to not be so screwed up. I mean, honestly, I need to be able to like fly with greater comfort also so I can get more sleep on the way over. But it would not be my choice to go back like on a vacation or something.
All right.
No.
Well, okay. So I want to ask you a question about your book. I got to get to this because it's shocking to me. So reading a part of From Madness to Mindfulness, Reinventing Sex for Women, I can't believe that 15 to 19 year old females, apparently 1 in 4 have STIs. And I gotta ask first.
Well, they have been diagnosed. Yes. Doesn't mean they still have it, because you can have like chlamydia or gonorrhea and just get rid of it.
Right. But even still, and I figure that's medication. What it meant, but it shocks me. So Did you find that in researching for this book? And here's why I ask. I know because it's your profession, you probably research similar subjects throughout the last, 20 years or however long you've been doing this. So if you researched this when you were younger, I don't know what the numbers were then. If this was recent research because of your book in the last few years, have the numbers changed? And is that, I don't know, were you shocked by this? I'm shocked by this is what I'm really trying to say.
Those are excellent questions. So first of all, I first started talking 29 years ago about sexual health topics and as an undergrad. And then I can remember when I was in grad school, so this is, 25 years ago, 20 years ago, that I was doing sexual health education on that campus also. We would talk about statistics because the thing is we were talking to college students, and so we were giving them statistics for relevant for 15 to 19 year olds, 15 to 24 year olds, and those always came up as the populations with the highest STD STI rates.
By the way, real quick, I have to interject. There is a friend of mine who's a very intelligent person. I'm not making fun of him, who did not understand what STI was, and I know what it is, but he knew what STDs were, so maybe we should explain.
Yeah. That. No, and this is great, because actually it's so funny. In my book that you're talking about, that I got pushback to call everything STIs instead of STDs, but I knew that pretty much for most people over 40, they only know STDs, and they don't know what STIs are, which is why I always include both of them. Because it's just a generational difference in education. So, right, STDs, sexually transmitted diseases, that's what we grew up with learning. There was a switch in public health to STIs, which is sexually transmitted infections, for two different reasons. One, because not all of STDs are actually diseases. And so it was sort of a misnomer. And then also to try to remove some of the stigma, because if you call something an infection versus a disease, there's less, because there's so much social shame around STDs and STIs. And so I think it was like a public health move to make people hopefully, calling them infections to feel that because if people are so shamed and feared by a topic, they sometimes take less care of themselves or less, want to talk less about topics because they want to bury their heads in the sand or avoid it. And so just trying to make the topic, I think, more accessible and then actually more accurate.
Okay.
For some of them.
I mean, it makes sense. So, I at first I thought, God, why would they change that? Just keep going with it. Everybody knows it. But now I understand because, and even if I hear infection rather than disease, infection can be short term and some diseases are not.
Right. And that's important because the main bacterial infections of that are sexually transmitted are like gonorrhea and chlamydia. And if you catch those early, actually often there aren't many symptoms, or the symptoms will just go away. Now, the main issue, though, if it never gets treated, it can lead to infertility in the long run. As infections, you get a, round of antibiotics or something, then it can be gone quickly. Versus something like HIV or herpes that are more end up more as diseases because they live in your system. And even if you don't with herpes, you might never have an outbreak or something, but it's believed to still live in the nerves, and that you're still carrying in your body. You can't necessarily flush it. So in general, so these are statistics I've known for a really long time. Now, what I would be curious to know is that in a year like 2020, my book was published over 3 years ago. What's that?
Holy crap. Has it really been over 3 years?
Yeah, it was August 2019. It was before COVID.
Oh my, okay, go ahead. Sorry, it just
threw me. I thought it was 3 year anniversary of COVID.
Wow.
Yeah, that's, okay. I gave you a hard time last week. So you're like, I have 31 pages in. I was like, you've had all year, let alone over 3 years.
All right, you know what? I deserve it. I can't even argue that. 3 years, holy crap. Okay.
The new guy I've been dating.
Yeah.
Dr. Bob, as you call him.
I know. Smarty Pants finished it in a week. I know.
No, he hasn't finished. No, because his schedule and his deadlines have been insane for grants and travel and all sorts of stuff. But he did say he got through chapter 3. And we've only been dating like 4.5 months. So I'm just saying.
Well, he's motivated to impress you. He's sleeping with you.
Yeah. It's actually interesting. I think it's just like genuine, you know, as somebody who's close to me, genuine interest in my work, you know, like my good friends should have.
Oh, boy. I knew that was coming. Yes. I knew that was coming.
I spun that in a way that I could say that.
You sure did.
But anyway, so the reason I was saying that book came out 3 years ago, the final draft of the manuscript, which then did get edited, though, I turned in a year before that. So we're looking for at least 4 years before that. Some of the reasons, I mean, I had been writing this book for like 5 years leading up to that. So some of these statistics could be older at that point. So you could say that these statistics could be like 10 years old at this point. So I don't know what I would say is because that the generational difference now would be Gen Z, which we know millennials, which is very different than Gen Xers and from boomers, having less sex. Huh. So, and then we also have COVID times where folks weren't getting out of their house. They don't have good social skills. And then we had the advent of technology where folks are used to connecting more from their homes through technology and not in person. So maybe, and because sex education in general has continued to get better and folks can learn stuff on social media in a way that actually may be beneficial. So if I had to guess, I would guess that those numbers have gone down. But they still may be the group with the highest percentage. I mean, that's the thing. We're comparing them to all other age groups also. So anyway, yes.
Well, thank you for that answer. I'm still shocked by it. I honestly, if you'd asked me that, I mean, again, having no knowledge, just my opinion from, I don't know, however I would come up with this on the behavior of humans at any age, I would have thought, okay, if you asked me that question, I'd say, yeah, what, 1 in 100? Not 1 in 4? Holy crap. Yeah. Anyway.
Well, and I also, because I think it said girls, too. Is that what, it was 15 to 19-year-old girls?
It was,
there's two factors to consider there. One is that anybody that sleeps with a penis is more likely to contract something than vice versa. So that means girls are more likely to get something from boys than boys are likely to get from girls.
And that's just because of the anatomy, right?
Yes, exactly. It's because of the anatomy and the depositing of sperm. The other piece, hold on. I had another thought about that.
Hold on while you think.
Oh, the other piece is, I think.
Oh, you're back. Okay, go ahead.
Oh, I know. Wait, do that music. I want to hear it.
There we go.
Wait, what's that from?
I don't remember. It's like a game show thing, and it kills me because I'm trying to remember that. Every time I do it, I try to remember it.
It brought me such joy.
Well, thank you, Dr. Jen. That's nice.
That's awesome. The other reason is, and this is pulling from knowledge from long ago, but I presume it hasn't changed. I think females are more likely to, is that true or not? I was going to say females are more likely to have symptoms from STDs or STIs than males, but maybe that's not true.
Hold on.
I don't know. Don't quote.
Well, now there's another question.
No, because the symptoms could be inside their vaginas and then they wouldn't know. So maybe it's actually the opposite.
Oh my God. You just answered my question. I didn't know you could have an STI and not know.
Oh yeah. Lots of times that's the case, which is part of why people, they think someone's like clean and they're like, oh, I've never had an STI or STD, but they don't actually know. And they could be carrying one and not know it. Yeah. That's part of the danger. Huh. Of not using condoms, of not getting tested, of assuming that you can quote unquote tell if someone's quote unquote clean. All of it's ridiculous because we don't know. Yeah.
Holy crap.
That's super common. That's part of the big reason why they get spread is because we don't know, not because people are being dicks, so to speak. because we don't know and because we're not good at talking about these things and we don't want to hurt somebody's feelings and people want to get kind of caught up in the moment and not have to worry about protection. But yes, that's primarily why they spread.
Huh. Well, that's scary. I knew temporarily you could not know about an infection. We learned that in, school back in the day. I just didn't know It could also be long term, like holy crap. I guess because your body could fight it off in some cases, right? I mean, right?
Well, so some it's not. Folks can have HPV, which some strains of it lead to genital warts. Other ones lead to cervical cancer for women. That can absolutely be invisible lesions that aren't visible to the eye. Herpes, folks can absolutely carry herpes in their nerves and never have an outbreak, so they have no idea unless you actually get a blood test for it. So, all of those are incredibly common. And that's why they're common, because folks don't know. Or maybe they're between symptoms and they just still could be shedding and not realize that they still could spread it. Yeah.
It's just nuts to me. Anyway.
Yeah. Well, honestly, it's a risk. You know, as somebody that's been single for a lot of my adult life, it's a risk that you have to take. You just have conversations with people, you get tested, you talk through risk factors, and you make the decisions and just know, well, I'm choosing to have a sexual relationship with somebody. This is a risk I have to take. And that's it. I mean, truly.
All right.
Because even if you use a condom, you still have like skin to skin contact that can still spread things. So there's no zero risk if you're having any sexual contact.
All right, I've got another question for you. And now we're getting a little bit long on the tooth here for the time, because I know I've got to get to work and you've got something to do. So next week, I want to talk to you about the thing I teased earlier about exercise, getting in shape, how it has to do with writing, but also sex. So if you don't mind, we'll bump that one, because I have a question for you about the topic we're on now.
We'll bump it.
No, I think this is a valid question.
Yeah.
Okay, so back in the day when I was single, I got around a little, but I really wasn't super active. You know, I had some activity and sometimes I'd be like, yeah, I've known these girls for a while, but I would always worry about, oh God, did I catch something? Whether even if I used a condom, even if we didn't actually have intercourse, I know there are other ways to get things, but I was always so leery of asking the question about their sexual activity because of STDs and STIs. Now, my question to you is, two questions. One, do you agree that it's harder for a guy to inquire about a woman's sexual background before they have any kind of intimacy than it is for a woman with a man? And I'll tell you why I ask you that in a second. Either way, what is a good way to have that conversation?
Well, I think the thing is, inquiring about somebody's sexual background is not going to, you're trying to assess their STD risk?
Well, like, I was back in the day. I mean, I didn't really ask.
Right, but so that's not a good path to it. The only way to know is to get tested. That's the thing. Inquiring about, somebody could have only had one partner that they were monogamous with, and they could absolutely have something.
And that makes sense.
Don't know. So, I mean, it is a numbers game, right? The more people you sleep with, and the more risks of not using condoms and exposed to other people, there's a greater risk. But still, like that, the thing is, that's not answering the question you're looking for. That's the problem. And the thing is, right, there isn't an easy way, if you're dating somebody new, to inquire about their past sexual encounters, because in some ways, it's none of your business. Now,
yeah, see.
You know, whether they have something they can give you if you're going to get into a sexual encounter, that is your business. But that's not the question you're getting at there. And the problem, especially for women, tend to be judged for their number of partners.
And see, that's why I was asking why,
right?
I think it's harder for a guy to ask a girl.
Women tend to make the number lower, and men tend to make the number higher. So, like, it's just we're not reliable narrators about our own sex lives. And then I've even talked to people who are like, no, we always use condoms. Da, da, da. You dig a little deeper, and you're like, well, there was a couple times we didn't, but you know, or it broke partway through, or we didn't have it on in the beginning, but then we put it on halfway through. Like, people are not reliable narrators about their own sex lives because people make so many assumptions. And we're not taught in sort of the nuances of what to pay attention to. And then therefore we don't communicate it well. So even when people don't mean to be lying or misleading somebody, they don't even know they are, because they don't know themselves and all the details that well. That's a good question. So one thing that I think is interesting, I remember years ago, this has come up in my private practice, of having a couple where they've been married for years, nobody was doing anything else, and she suddenly broke out with herpes. and she had never had it before.
Oh, God.
And went to the doctor, right, and was horrified. So then right away, he thinks she's cheating. And she goes, I haven't cheated. I haven't done anything. So then she's like, you must have cheated and given it to me.
Well, that's what I would think. No, yes. What was the answer? Do we know?
No. Well, as far as I know, if everybody was being honest, he hadn't cheated either. It just seemed that he actually had been carrying it since before their marriage and didn't know it.
Holy what? And how many years was this?
Yeah, I actually don't even remember. It might have been 5 years or something. I can't remember. Actually, it was a long time ago. But anyway, yeah, so there is a possibility of something like that. And then for whatever reason, he was shedding, her immune system maybe was down, and or both of theirs, and she had a breakout. So there are, I mean, again, we're presuming everybody's being honest, but that is possible. If we're carrying things we don't know, you could be in a long-term relationship, and then suddenly somebody has a breakout. And then you got to figure out, yeah. And then it's awful because then you're pointing fingers at each other and you feel betrayed. You feel betrayed no matter what. It's really rough.
Wow.
Anyway, oh, it's just endless around these topics.
I guess so. I mean, if you told me, a few months, I get it. 6 months, maybe. But if it's been more than a couple of years, that kind of trips me out.
Yeah. Yeah. So, anyway. I know.
And that's why if I'm ever single again, I don't plan on being. I love my wife very much. I'm going to keep it in my pants as long as I can.
No, you just need to slap a condom on and talk about getting tested and not get caught up in the moment and know you're going to be at risk. But so is everyone else. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's just great news for all of us.
That was
it?
Very romantic, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.